Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. What a great song. It's one of my very favorite songs. I say that all the time, but I think I mean it this time. That really is that's a great song. All right. It is good. Oh, good morning, church.
Good morning.
I kind of got out of my rhythm there. Yeah, it is great to see you all this Sunday morning. I'm a bachelor this Sunday morning. My kids are with my parents, and we celebrated this weekend because we had no kids by getting my wife the flu. So she's a super great adult time. That was wonderful. We have kind of been, I did such husbandly things as going to get medication and all that sort of stuff. So she's at home. It's a type B, so it's not as bad. I don't know a lot about, she said she had type B flu, which I guess is B for, you know, not as bad. I don't know. It hasn't been as bad as some forms of the flu. So we shouldn't complain. All right. I need to begin today with some very special. You guys know who you are. I need you really quick. Here comes one. Ladies. Where are my other helpers for my papers? Here comes. No. My paper passer writers. Here's two, three, four. All right. Here is the deal. Oh, and one more. All right, here's the deal. We are going to finish up this directory, and you will have forgotten that you were supposed to sign up these papers. So we're going to do this Sunday and next Sunday, and that is it. And then if you want to be in it, you can still be added to the online app. We can update that anytime, put your picture in anytime, but we want that soon, by the way. But this is the paper. If you have not filled out something like this, where we have your name, your phone number, your cell phone number, your email address, birthday, anniversary, all that stuff, you give us, you know, what you want. We prefer to have it all, but give us what you want, and you will make it into the actual printed physical directory. If you have not done this, you are not in there. That doesn't mean we don't love you. That doesn't mean you still can't come on Sunday mornings. It just means we won't know how to get in touch with you. So we need to get your information today. So I have these very special helpers. They're going to be going around the auditorium. You take that side over there. And you go help. If you have not filled out one of these, I just need you to raise your hands. Ladies, okay, you go over there and help him over on that side over there. All right? You go, here's some more. You two ladies take the middle. You go on this side of the middle, and you go on this side of the middle. All right? And since you look the most mature, I'm going to give you that whole section right over there. If you have not filled out one of these papers, just raise your hands. Just raise them up. Oh, you're safe. You're good. No sweat. All right, just raise your hands. We want to get this information. We want to get you in there. We are trying our very, very best to kind of build an idea. This is helpful, by the way. Not just so that we can, you know, contact the proper authorities, because we're trying to build a good idea about the nature and character of our congregation. We want to know, everybody, you guys, all you guys got one. Everybody's in the pictorial directory, right? There's some more back there, going back there. All right, anybody in here who has not gotten a paper who needs to get into the directory? Here we go, right back there in the middle. There we go. Over here, anybody who has not gotten one? Great. Now, at the close of service, thank you, helpers, so much. If you have any extra papers, bring those up here. And we're going to do the next Sunday, too. In case you have, anybody have any left? You passed all of yours out. You guys are excellent. Good job. Y'all give our helpers a hand. Woo, we're getting there. All right, because we want to understand the kind of the character. We have a lot of people who are in our previous directory who are no longer here, and then there are so many of you who are here now who are not in our previous directory that we just have to update that. And we've got things that are kind of outdated. Many of you don't even have a home phone, and that's the only contact number we have for you. So we want to get cell phone numbers. It'd be nice to have your birthday and anniversary so that I can do all my birthday card mailing. Well, I don't really do that. But, you know, if I did, If I did, I do notice your birthdays on Facebook, but I don't. I'm really bad about mailing actual cards. But other people would like to have that, and we'd like to have that. If you don't want us to know your birthday, that's fine. Just make up something. If you don't have an email address, that's fine. Don't give us that. If you don't have a cell phone number, don't make up a number for that one. But we want to get that information because we want to understand who you are. All right. Today, I know this is going to be exciting. We're going to be starting a study of, drum roll please. Ready? The Ten Commandments. I know. Super exciting, isn't it? I know. I'm ready. When we say the Ten Commandments, what do we think of? Well, we think of, thou shalt not. Yes, rules, regulations, law, maybe even legalism. That we think of Ten Commandments, these are literally the hard and fast rules of God, right? I mean, they are, when we say it's set in stone, this is what we mean. But I'm going to let you in on a little bit of a secret up front. I don't think this will kill the sermon or anything, but just a little bit of a secret. There are more to the Ten Commandments than rules and regulations. In fact, really more to the Ten Commandments than commandments. In fact, did you know that even though we call them the Ten Commandments, that the Bible never does? Never calls them the Ten Commandments. Now, it talks about the commands of God, and it talks about the order of God, all those sorts of things, but the Bible never calls these the Ten Commandments. You know what it calls them? It calls them the words, the Ten Words, the Decalogue is what scholars often refer to it as. They're not treated like law so much as divine instruction in living. It's not about laying down the law. It's about telling people how to live. So let's begin today with a little bit of a prop quiz. Who can name, and we're going to do this one out loud. Who can name the Ten Commandments? And no fair reading up there, all right? Don't cheat and look up there. Who can name one of the Ten Commandments? Yes. No murdering. Attaboy. I bet your mom has told you that lots of times. That's right. Thou shalt not murder. What's another one? Obey your parents. I bet your mom has told you that lots of times too. And that is right. Do not murder, I think, is number six. Obey your parents, I think, is number five. Yes. What'd you say? Don't steal. Very good. Never steal. That's number six. No, wait, number seven. Yeah, number seven. Yes, Tom. Oh, I thought you were raising your hand. Honor your father. Yeah, really, it's honor your father and mother. Ephesians 6 echoes it like obey your parents. But yeah. Honor your father and mother. Yes, sir. What's another one? Don't bear false witness. Very good. I think that's number nine. Anybody else? We know them, right? No gods before me. Number one. You may know what number two is. No images, no idols. That's right. No other gods, no idols. Don't take the name of the Lord in vain. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Honor your father and mother. Don't commit murder. You got another one? Which one do you have now? Don't worship other gods. Yeah, that was number two, I think. Don't commit adultery. That's a big one. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. And finally, the last one is don't covet. Now, I think we could all agree that the Ten Commandments have been really important, even for our world today. Ancient though they are. I mean, we're talking about millennia, a document that is millennia old. And they've still been important for our world today. They're still important after all these years. are they still important to us? I mean, we are New Testament Christians, so are these important for us? And if they are, then why are they important? So to answer that question, we need to start a little bit of a story. This is just kind of to understand where these fit in the story of God. So let's start with a little story. It begins with the descendants of Abraham. God made a covenant with Abraham, a promise to him. I'm going to make you a nation. I'm going to bless the world. I'm going to bless the nations through you. And Abraham winds up in Egypt. Remember that? And really through no fault of their own, it was just sort of circumstances. But the people of Abraham, the descendants of Abraham, they become enslaved in Egypt. Remember, they were forced to make these mud bricks, and the taskmasters, how cruel they were. They would work them. There was no such thing as a 40-hour work week. It was work sun up to sundown every day, working them to death. They were powerless to escape. They were overwhelmed by the odds. Egypt was one of the, if not the, great world power at the time. They have a standing army that would dwarf anything the Israelites could put together. Plus, they had no weapons, no implements of war, had not been trained in it. So they are trapped. They are in slavery. And then something amazing happens. God sends an agent, Moses, to redeem them, to buy them out. There is this sort of divine or miraculous disruption. You remember the plagues in Egypt? There were 10 plagues, and we're going to ask you what all the 10 plagues were. But God shows His, Yahweh God, comes into Egypt, into the house of the, you ever study Egyptian mythology? You know, all those Egyptian gods, how powerful they were, and how one god was the god of, you know, the Nile in particular, and one god controlled the sun, one god controlled the harvest. They've got all these different gods who do these different things. And Yahweh God, this outside god, this other god, comes into Egypt, and He displays His controlling power over the very facets of life that Egypt's gods were supposed to control. He goes into Egypt, and what does He do with the Nile? Remember? You may remember what happened to the Nile? Turned to blood, didn't it? What about the God who controlled the sun? Remember, God made it completely dark. What about the God who controlled rainfall, who made it rain on the crops? Remember, God sent those terrible storms. God controlled everything that these Egyptians, and even the Israelites, many of them, believed were controlled by these other gods. There's this miraculous disruption. And so the Egyptians relent. They let God's people go. Remember the Moses telling Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses lets, Moses leads them out of Egypt. And they aren't long out of Egypt before the Pharaoh regrets letting all of his free labor go, and sends this mighty Egyptian army. Now, at this point of the journey, the Israelites are hard and fast up against the Red Sea. I mean, you really know where to go. You got the Red Sea in front of you because the Egyptian army is hot on their heels. And God leads them to escape through the Red Sea. With the promise of death at their backs, they escape to life on the other side of the Red Sea. Pretty amazing escape. And then they get out into the wilderness. They get out here, and at Mount Sinai, they encounter God. Now, these people that encounter God are already people of the covenant. God had already made a promise with them because God of Abraham, I'm going to make you a great nation. You're going to bless all the peoples of the world. And He promised that, and these were His descendants. So they were already in covenant with God, already people of the covenant, but they needed something more. They needed something concrete. They needed something tangible that they could put their hands on so that they could understand who this God was. And God gives them these stone tablets and the words from Moses. And then after that, after this, on the heels of this part of the story, they go into this long journey. Now, part of this journey is the fault of their own lack of faith. They get to the promised land, don't have the faith to go and do what God told them to do. But they're journeying for 40 years toward the promised land. Years and years and years of fruitless wanderings. So what is the importance of this? What is the importance of that encounter? What's so big about that? What is it? What is this encounter about? And what is this God all about? Well, it all begins with Yahweh God speaking these words by way of introduction. From Acts 20, verse 2, he says, I put that in all caps for a reason. Yes, the name of God, I am. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Now, before we get to any commands, before we get to don't murder, don't steal, honor your father and mother, all those good commands, before we get to any of those, God says, I need to reveal my character to you. You need to understand this about me because this is the God that I am. In fact, this statement, this introduction sort of, the revelation about the one who's speaking, it's not so much an introduction to the Ten Commandments as it is a qualification for them. In other words, unless this God is a God worth following, there's no sense in listening to him. If he says, behold and pay attention, I am the God who controls the insects in West Africa. Well, that's really great and important for the people who live in West Africa, but here we are in northern Egypt, wandering kind of in between here and the Arabian Peninsula, so that doesn't help us so much. Behold, I am the God who controls the faraway stars. Now, that doesn't help us either. We need something here and something now, and so he introduces himself as the God who is the God who has delivered them. So five times throughout the book of Exodus thus far, God has told Moses, I'm going to be faithful to my covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Remember, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob got in this sort of jam. Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac, and God provided the ram and saved Isaac, and so thus saved these people. And so he says, I'm going to be faithful to what I said to Abraham. And five times God tells Moses also, that I'm going to save you, I'm going to deliver you, and I'm going to be with you and deliver you from the oppression of the Egyptians. Five times for each of those things. For instance, one of the best known, probably the best summation of who this God is when he talks about himself, Exodus chapter 3, beginning at verse 7, God says, I have surely... Now listen, I've highlighted the verbs up here. I want you to see what God says that he does. And when I get to those words, and you may can see them, I don't know how well that shows up back there, but when I get to the red words, I want you to say them out loud with me, okay? All right. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. And I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a land, to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So who is this Yahweh God? Who is this God who's come to us now? What's he all about? Well, he's the God who will hear our cry, who will see our needs, who will come to us and deliver us. That's who this God is. He is a holy God. He is a righteous God. But Yahweh's holiness, his otherness, is not seen in his sameness. Sometimes that's the way we think of as holy, is being set apart, being separate. God's holiness, Yahweh's holiness, is not about his separateness from the unredeemed, but his presence in their plight of bondage. It's not that God is so far away because he's so good and we're so bad. It's that God, despite being pure and holy, is right there in the midst. That's what God's holiness means. He is in there with them and he's delivering them. He opens up the Ten Commandments and he says, I'm a God worth listening to. The way he says this is he's saying, I will be present with you. I will deliver you and I will be faithful to my covenant with you. That's who I am. This is the God. This is our God. Our God is a God of deliverance. over and over and over again throughout the scriptures and throughout our lives, he reveals himself to his people as a compassionate God. And a God who's not only great because he has compassion for them, well, that's great that he can join us in our suffering, but he has the strength and the might to do something about our suffering. He is holy and compassionate and mighty God. And these 10 commandments, these words that we think of rules, these were not just some arbitrary requirements. The Ten Commandments, by the way, the Ten Commandments are not exhaustive, right? We know that the laws go on and on. I'm not even certain that everything in there is the most important thing. I mean, it doesn't say don't rape in the Ten Commandments, right? It doesn't say that. It doesn't say anything about kidnapping. Don't kidnap in there. It doesn't say anything about a lot of issues that we would say are very important. So what are these Ten Commandments about? Well, these commandments, these words, they reflect the essential character of this God of deliverance. One of the dangers of thinking about the Ten Words, the Ten Commandments, as a list of do's and don'ts, which is the way we generally think of them, one of the real dangers in doing that is that it tends to lead us down to the road of strict legalism and self-righteousness, so that we come to the Ten Commandments and go, check, 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 I'm good, right? I haven't murdered anyone that I know of. I haven't stolen so much. I haven't committed adultery physically. I haven't, I've honored my parents when they were worth it. We can go down these Ten Commandments and we can justify ourselves all along the ride. But I believe that we are delivered from this legalism and this self-righteousness by interpreting each commandment not as a legalistic rule that's just resting on the power of an authoritarian God or an authoritarian religion that has this series of rules. But that these are commands that are based on a delivering and compassionate God. The reason the Ten Commandments are important at all is because of the character of the God who gave them. Some would argue that these commandments are really more about justice. And you know what? I completely agree, but you have to understand a working definition of the word justice. Because when we think about justice, we have one idea, and I believe Scripture has a very different idea of justice. Because justice in the Bible is delivering justice. It's justice that delivers the poor. It delivers the needy and the outcast. It delivers the dominated and the victims of violence and restores those people to community. You want justice, it's about bringing those people back. It is delivering them from their bond and bringing them into the household of God. This God that we're following, he cares about delivering restorative justice. That's the God of the Ten Commandments. And to know this God is to know his delivering justice. And so knowing this God it's not just important, it is crucial. Like, you cannot get the Ten Commandments unless you know who this God is. It is crucial to understand the Ten Commandments, and I would argue that it's crucial to your development as a human being. It is crucial to your family's development as a spiritual unit. It is crucial to the development of our congregation as a cohesive body. Because believe it or not, we are somewhere in this story. Like, this story that we went through here, we, and by we, I mean me and you, not those people over on the other side of the auditorium, me and you, we need deliverance. Some of you are still trapped in slavery. You're still caught up in a life of sin from which you desperately want to be free, or at least you want to be free. Maybe you don't want to be out of it so bad just yet, but you wished that you did. Maybe you've tried and you've tried and you have worked and you have resolved and you have used every self-help technique, book, and TV show that is known to mankind to try to break free. It is all to no avail because you are powerless and unable to escape the snares of sin in which you are caught. You are in the realm of slavery and you don't know what to do about it. Some of you are at this amazing time in which you are experiencing miraculous disruption. Now you're still caught in bondage to your old life, but you are experiencing the power of God in your life. And in order to get your attention and in order to loosen the bonds and in order to offer you an alternative to your present situation. And God may be doing this through godly men and women who are in your life. Maybe it was one of those people who brought you to be a part of this congregation. Maybe he's done it through circumstances in which you have gotten a job or lost a job, in which your relationship has gotten better or deteriorated significantly worse. And maybe he's doing it through your finances, or maybe he's doing it through your addictions, but God is disrupting your life to bring your attention upon him and to work to set you free. Others of you are a little further down the road and you are ready for an actual escape. Now, for the Israelites, it was accomplished by passing through the Red Sea, going from certain death at their backs, at the hands of the Egyptian army, onto new life on the other side of the sea. We, however, we, for Christians, have a very similar experience because we pass through the waters from death to new life as well. Just like the Israelites. With certain death behind us and seemingly no future in front of us, God brings us a way of escape through the water. Now this is work that we accomplish. This is not something the Israelites didn't cross the Red Sea in order to make God happy. They did it because it was God's work to achieve God's end for our benefit. And that's the way we think about baptism. That's what we think about coming into relationship with God. Still others of you, and I'm going to put probably myself into this group, are on the long journey towards the promised land, apparently. But our journey is wandering. And we're beginning to wonder if we're actually making any progress at all. Because we've been out here for a long, long time. And I have to tell you that without that divine encounter in there, that interactive encounter with the living God, we're going to continue sort of in aimless fashion, doing some good here, doing some not so good there, kind of going here, always journeying, always going somewhere. We're certainly sure, but we're always going somewhere, just never arriving. You know? So why is this encounter with God? You ever thought about this? Why is it Ten Commandments? I mean, why not this divine encouragement instead? Like when God comes to meet these people at Sinai, why not just sort of a holy pat on the back? Just keep going, guys. You're going to get there. What's with the Ten Commandments? What's so significant about these instructions? And what can we know about these instructions just based on the description of God who gave them? Here's why these Ten Commandments are important for you. We're not going to touch a single commandment this morning. This is sort of a brief overview of all of them. But here's why you need the Ten Commandments. Why I need the Ten Commandments. Because the God who gave them is the God of compassion and deliverance. And so we can know that apart from His instruction, apart from His words, we have no real life, we have no real freedom, and we have no real joy. And there are plenty of us who are living a Christian life that looks exactly like that, with no life, no freedom, and no joy. Oh, we may be delivered from the bondage to sin that we once were ensnared. We may have come through waters of baptism. But life on the other side, frankly, doesn't look a whole lot better than slavery. You may be doing exactly what you think you want to do in order to get exactly what you think you want. But in the end, you realize you're sort of hollow and empty, right? You're doing what you think you want to do to get what you think you want to get, and you're still not satisfied. So there's one reason why the Ten Commandments are important for you. Here's another reason that it's important for you, and I put me in this category as well. It's because we're caught up in the bondage to this slavery. We have an unfulfilled life. So because God is a God of deliverance, and because these commands reflect delivering character, we know ahead of time what to do. We can go ahead and do what we think we want to do anyway, apart from these commands, though. But it's going to make our life better. It's going to make our life infinitely more complicated. These commands are the way to uncomplicated life. We were created for singularity. One God, one spouse, care for the needs of others, maybe not so much for ourselves, honor those to whom honor is due. I mean, it is a simple, straightforward, singular life. And to break these commandments is to complicate your life. Every one of them, to break those commandments is to complicate your life. So when we don't make God our only God, life does not get better because we're getting what we want. It gets worse because we've gotten what we thought we wanted. When we take from others because they have and we don't, that does not make life better. It makes life infinitely more complicated. You know what we call it? We don't call it coveting in our society. We call it keeping up with the Joneses. But when we do that, life's not better. It's more complicated. It's not so much that, and this is the rationale behind this. It's not so much that you're going to hell if you break the Ten Commandments. It's more that if you break the Ten Commandments, if you don't follow this life code, you're already in hell. Live in hell right now. These commands are not about do these or else I'm get you. It's do these or else you're going to wish that you had life. The Ten Commandments are not God's laying down the law. They're His offering of life. I want you to think about it this way. We have been adopted into a family. Think about any child who is parentless, who has been living a really rough and hard life, and they've been adopted into this loving family. And the father, on adopting this child, on bringing this child into his home, wife, with his other children, that night at the dinner table says, I want to tell you who we are. This is who we are. This is how we treat one another. And this is how you'll treat me. And this is how, because this is who we are. This is our ID. The Ten Commandments are not coming in and the Father slapping down a book, a rule book, and says, do these or else. No, this is who we are. And this is how life works for our family. You and I, we may think we have it all together, but we are missing the empowerment. And I'm not being general here like all Christians everywhere. I mean me and you, Forrest Mill and our congregation. We are missing some of the empowerment that comes from being a people created and united by God. We're missing out on real life. All for want of getting what we want. So this morning, if you are ready to pass from death to life, to escape your bondage, God has been knocking at your door and on your way out. But if you have been wandering in the wilderness now, seemingly aimlessly, and you are ready for direction, ready to be bound for the land, we want you to know that we will pray for you if you need our help or encouragement. We want to work with you and work through you so that you may truly get what you need. we can help you in any way this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
Ladies, if you'll start. I want Jesus to walk with me. I want Jesus to walk with me. Life's pilgrim journey. I want Jesus to walk with me in my trials. He'll walk with me in my trials. He'll walk with me along life's pilgrim journey. I want Jesus to walk with me.